Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. Hello. By the way, I'm still wondering. In some sense, I feel like I'm only beginning to become more curious. Sitting here with Hillary Lake. Hillary is helps people discover new movement, creativity, wonder. She's doing some wonderful work around helping people get beyond some of their separate realities, living separate realities, right? We've been separate realities. We could have a new seeing together. It's certainly a deep interest of mine, by the way. We got Lisa LaRose, producer, resident family member, has a secret new name that represents her latest energy configuration, which I'm not able to say in public because I haven't asked Lisa yet. But it's a really wondrous name. You know, there was in the indigenous traditions, the village says your name when you're a baby. And then if you're drained or something happens, they sing the name back, and it comes back. Mm-hmm. That's how we really build resonance, you know. My names they called me in school weren't those kind of names. They were the names I wanted to forget and not be called. We didn't really understand that naming something summons something. So, Lisa, you were so wonderful to write up the write-up for today's program, and I need to improv the write-up because I thought I'd put it in my left pocket. But I'll need to practice what I call improvisational flow, or living your life beyond the script, another way to put it. So here we go, Lisa.
It's very appropriate for because of the topic today, which was, you know, vibrant speaking and living without a script, being unscripted. So you couldn't have unfolded any more perfectly.
It's not called unpreparedness. It's called being perfectly on topic.
Yeah. Well, so every moment, each moment of your life, you could be the counterfeit. So there's the vibrant sensation or the vital sensation, and then there's like this counterfeit self. So when you speak from the counterfeit, it's very hard. So when I say vibrant speaking, and you're speaking, you're living from the vibrant sensation, from your body, from your pulse, then it becomes a sort of adventure of sensation and awareness when you speak. And it could be when, you know, an unexpected circumstance, which often happens. But it's not like a surprise. And also, I'm particularly delighted. I love working with men and women. And there's something so beautiful about when we come together and explore what's been our separate reality or our anthropology, and then discover how to bridge that gap. So it becomes this relational moment, you know, which I know has your interest.
Wow.
Oh, I got to give you this mic.
Yeah.
Keep beginning.
We have this intimate experience of sharing a headset. So,
yeah.
Well, I can relate a lot to that given my personal experience right now of being in an intimate relationship that's shifting in its relationship and also being in the unknown together and really allowing ourselves to imagine what could be out of what we have experienced and created together. And even in our dreams are extremely informative right now. And so we're, you know, actually sharing a bed in this process and allowing the dreams to inform how we relate to each other.
Is the bed in the restaurant or someplace else? I was just looking for the bed.
You're my home.
And your
home. Yeah. But I'm also really excited to talk about this topic because I'm collaborating with Jimmy Two Feathers in Boston around creating gender reconciliation retreats. Bringing brothers and sisters together and those who don't identify with a binary gender and allowing us to speak from whatever gender emerges through us at any time. And also listening to the stories of men, women listening to stories of men, and men listening to stories of women in a kind of council format. So women might be sitting on the inside and speaking, and men are listening on the outside, and then switching and men being on the inside and being on the outside and having that kind of space created and yet being together too.
Lisa, have you ever heard that term before? Was it binary gender?
Yeah, well, so we have a gender binary in our culture of male and female, or you know, masculine and feminine, and there's a lot of people out there who don't identify with either of that. So they may be transgender and maybe gender non-binary.
No, I have not heard that term before.
You have not heard the term, okay. Yeah, you know, it's almost like a new, not that it's a new culture. I think what's happening is there's perhaps an emerging culture of exploring what's been. And at the same time, there's this other conversation about the submissive and the dominant. So in Vibrant Speaking, you know, a lot of people, when they see the metaphorical stage, whether it's interacting with someone or being on stage, they, I think a lot of our conditioning lends us to conform, to get along, and not to really find our voice and then find our relational voice. So relational voice is being able to establish rapport and connection with people who have a very separate reality, different point of view. So when I think about Vibrant Speaking, part of it is being able to bridge this common reality that often sometimes we don't see. We don't see. So so we don't see it. Well, I just have experience. I just have experience, Lisa and Hillary. I might know, it was at my daughter, and I could just see that what sort of happens insidiously is that we get assumptions and conclusions of the poison of relationship. So when I'm speaking, a lot of people feel like they need to speak to confirm. It's almost in their bodies where they kind of, as an example, we play a lot with your bodies. When I have people on stage, I have them make themselves bigger, smaller. I have them speak to the back row. So there's a lot of playing. And I'm really encouraging people to allow themselves to express no matter what their state and not have a goal about it, actually. So we have a whole section on going beyond goals to experience your claim. You know, so we kind of look at that whole thing about goal setting as an obstacle, because a lot of times our goals have to do with our conditioning. So a claim is kind of what move, when you're really moved and inspired, what would you speak from? So I think I started that right up, Lisa, by saying,
well, you know,
I kind of say, but go ahead, Lisa.
One of the things that actually I was really curious about, you said from the first time we raise our hand in the classroom, we give up some of the intuitive sense that pulsates within us. And I was really curious to see what exactly your thoughts were. What was your experience when you were a child that drew you to that conclusion?
Well, I think I'm just laughing because I met this really brilliant woman recently, and she was in special ed for years and years and years, and yet when I met her, she was just absolutely brilliant. My experience was that I was always awkward for me in classrooms. It was awkward because what I noticed was I didn't even know the word. I didn't know that such a thing as being a lateral thinker. And yet I already was very lateral. Like I would hear things and I would want to say something, but I was insecure and awkward. And also as soon as I would raise my hand, a lot of other people might stand up. So what happens is we raise our hand just posturally in our posture, our physicality. My experience was that it was an awkward thing. And so at a certain point I left school. and how I finished school was tutors. So actually, when I finished school with tutors, I would have these really mind-expanding conversations with them, and I would sort of get acknowledged for speaking, which I never had happen in school. So I was, I guess you could say, I really found people's stories. So when I would speak to people, there's two stories. So the story, the vibrant sensation story, and then the counterfeit. So I started to pay attention to that. So my experience was is that it was an awkward thing being around people and speaking, because I felt the speaking was regurgitating something that we were supposed to know that seemed kind of routine and dead to me on some level. And so I got asked to leave the classroom pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. So I associated the classroom with sleeping and then at a certain point being humorous to leave the classroom. And then I brought my own books to school. Mm. So
as for somebody that may not be that familiar with the term lateral, like a lateral thinker, but they mm-hmm. may be able to relate to some of the things that you're saying, can you sort of go into that a little bit more?
It's such a deep, wonderful, great question. So a lateral thinker, and you might be listening right now and realize you're a lateral thinker. Lateral thinkers usually, they just see beyond A, B, C, D. They tend to see some of the most people I meet that I would say in the realm of mastery. Like I met a psychiatrist as an example, and he had a suicidal client who would never go to a therapist. He took out to kill himself, but he loved playing chess. He would never acknowledge he would go to therapy, but he would play chess with the psychiatrist. And I realized when I would get around, I'd get around mastery, it's like sometimes the language of the soul is not linear. It's lateral. It could be someone wants to sit with a pear and a scarf on, and they don't have a reason. I guess maybe simply put, a lateral way of seeing something is not, it's not linear. It's almost like when I experience the world, Hillary and Lisa, I experience the world and how people see it in their language from what I call the horizontal. Mm-hmm. And I experience the world from the vertical and the lateral. I experience, like, how could they not talk about that and acknowledge that? Like, I'm really puzzled. Okay. So a lateral thinker just tends to see something that's not obvious. It's either not obvious and usually not even acknowledged or spoken of. So when I happen to meet world-class people who would be great healer surgeons, and I just read something, by the way. It's a lateral way of seeing something. So when people think they want to make money, they'll think, well, they got to do this thing and that thing. Not to say doing certain practical things isn't spot on. I teach the speakers to have a path of action. But this guy wrote a book on people who made unusual amounts of money. And there was this one, he worked at an inn in Maui. This is a lateral thinking, by the way. This is going to have some lateralness to it, that's why I'm bringing it up. So this one couple came, they checked in. I think they checked in twice here, and they made love. They stayed in the room and made love 7 days straight. And that was their strategy for allowing more money in their lives and wonder and abundance. So that's a lateral strategy. A lateral thinking is usually, when you hear it, it usually doesn't make any sense to you. At the Olympics, one of the coaches, he came up with a way of ski jumping that the other coaches laughed about and degraded him. They were mean to him. And when he won the gold medal, they wanted to learn. So sometimes in the lateral, to give you an example, Eckhart Tolle's book, many publishers said The Power of Now was already written in the 70s by Ram Dass, Be Here Now. And they said it didn't need to be written again. It was written once. We don't need a Canadian to interpret, a German-Canadian guy saying the same thing. Now, the guy who actually published, Mark Allen, who published The Power of Now, told me he never read the whole book. He just liked the way it felt in his body and awareness. Something changed when he read it. So being lateral, you're going to feel like a dark horse. You're going to feel like an outsider. And it's going to challenge other people with you. And so then I discovered thought viruses. So thought viruses are what people live in they don't see. So a thought virus is an example. It's flu season. People don't get work unless they have a certain degree. In this economy, you know, you're lucky to have a job. These are thought viruses that people share back and forth that they're unconscious of. So a lateral thinker isn't just thinking about working at McDonald's. He's kind of living like, when Steve Jobs gave his talk. This is a lateral comment he made, by the way. He said that He says, if you want to work for me at Apple, stay at Stanford. That's a good idea. And he goes, if you want to own a company, get the heck out of here today. Leave. Lateral thinkers. So when I first started to discover I was in lateral thinking and I just didn't have chronic dyslexia, I started to feel at ease and trusted my improvisational flow rather than I strained to meet the linear world. So improvisational flow came out of when I would meet people, I think why they were feeling such stress and panic, which they were, and they were taking medications, was they were trying to meet the audience they were meeting the audience with a lot of strain and anxiety because they felt they had to conform to a linear standard. So a lateral standard is kind of like you invite the audience into wonder. So how that happened in my life recently is I met Janet, who owns a yoga center now in Hawaii, and she spoke to me. This is where golden feedback comes in. I need your golden feedback today. And she said, Glenn, she goes, you speak the language of mind. You speak the language of the invisible. And then she flew here, and we did a performance together. We never had done this performance together. So the lateral is the from my experience was it's the non-linear wonder of what you call flow. So part of vibrant speaking is the flow state and getting a sense of your body. That's why I'm sitting here with Hillary. I want Hillary to share her wonder and wisdom with people who want to, yes, have the experience on the stage, but also to trust this lateral, which I feel, by the way, I had this discussion with the founder of Forbes magazine because his son was tortured at school. And he printed a book and he said his son was physically pained being in school. Mm-hmm. I related. Mm-hmm. And what he said to me was he got his son into a private school where he could be on a ball all day. Mm-hmm. And his son went from being in a torture chamber. See, another thing about the body is lateral thinkers, we like to move and we don't like to sit still. We can't stand sitting still. So another thing I noticed was as soon as I would go to class, I wanted to do something because I couldn't stand being in class. So I was labeled a problem. And right. So another thing is lateral thinkers, you start to realize that writing something down. So for instance, I can never get a job. I realized, of course, I didn't want to get a job. But it happens when I spoke to someone and had a lateral relational conversation. This is all part of vibrant speaking, discovering the kind of wondrous being that you are, how to express it, and create your own career and live in a state of wonder and discover new relationships and connections with people. Your life's precious. Stay with us here from the Vibrant Living Network. There's Holy Lake.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Everybody, for a lot of people, just now, Okay, I'm just putting my earplug back in. It's a new earplug for me. I'm sitting over Hillary Lake, new Vibrant Living team member. Lisa LaRose, who... So, I want to say something about Lisa that... So, I met Lisa 18 years ago, and as I talk about lateral thinking and vibrant speaking, I felt I could be with Lisa, and Lisa was curious and would allow me to be more. So, I don't know about you, Hillary or Lisa. I had only my grandfather provided me that in my family. My grandfather would take me for walks, and I felt somehow a connection to nature, and I guess I just felt like I was a different person. And it sort of happened in my life in different ways. So now when I get together with people, it's almost instant. I could blink and kind of get a sense, a much deeper sense of, I guess, the what's intimate and real for that person, and then have this mutual sense of seeing. And so, and then the conversation and the connections are different. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course, what relates to that is breathing, right? The relation to the breath. So Lisa, you asked that really good question, and I took off on the vertical horse for a moment.
No, I think
that was a powerful question.
I'm curious, you know, for Hillary, I would imagine that she sees herself, and I don't want to speak for her, but as a lateral thinker. I'm curious if there are some other people in her life that have touched her in the same way. And I think that's why, you know, you two reconnected was because of that, I would suspect.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really appreciate your questions, Lisa, and your curiosity. I really relate to Glenn in that way. And in some ways, you know, I've struggled as a lateral thinker as well. And I was just talking with Glenn in the break that I have defined it more in a vertical sense because I studied ministry and divinity. And so we think about kind of relationships to the divine in a vertical way or a horizontal way. And the vertical is a transcendent experience of the divine and the horizontal is an immanent. So that, you know, might be having insights from a vertical or a lateral place, a transcendent place that brings one beyond the embodied emotional relational experience in that moment where, so for instance, Glenn not feeling a part of this classroom educational experience. And I didn't have that challenge. I really fit in really,
really
well.
Wow.
Wherever I am, I generally can fit in. And I think it's because I have really strong gifts in that kind of imminent way in relationship with other humans to feel out what is the story, what's going on here, where do I fit in, how do I relate and bring some generative experience. I like to use that word generative a lot.
Right.
And it's been a very natural thing. I haven't had to try to do that. And yet an unconsciousness in that way, not relating consciously in that way, has meant that I've felt really unseen. And really lost as well because I'm relating to this collective story, the collective conditioning, and not recognizing the lateralness or the verticalness in me. And yet I've always had those gifts, but they've kind of come spontaneously, and I'm like, all right, where'd that come from? You know, and I haven't really trusted it as a gift, a strong gift. Yet as I've grown up, and I think particularly going to divinity school, I was kind of sick and tired of doing this horizontal thing and being in that conditioned world, and did as much as I could to get out of the conditioning of be a good girl and do the right thing. And then I find myself at Harvard Divinity School and I'm like, oh shit, you know, sorry to swear online.
In the divine sense of that word.
Yeah, right. But I think this is true for a lot of really brilliant women. And I don't know if you relate to this, Lisa, or not, but we can really find, okay, how are we going to leverage this situation and fit in but not be seen or stand out too much, because that might be dangerous. We might get taken advantage of. We might you know, being an attractive woman, that was also scary for me too, to attract too much attention. I experienced sexual abuse, so that makes sense. And then all of a sudden I'm in divinity school and I don't want to study theology. I don't want to read books. I don't want to write. I did all that. I got there doing that. And now I wanted to be, I wanted to do, I wanted to create. And all of this lateral information was just pouring through me. And that's all I could do, was do yoga, dance, sing, and channel information, because I'd fall asleep when I read a book. Or when I started to write something, my brain would just shut down if I was trying to write based on this old kind of horizontal, how do I fit in, do the right thing, get the good grade kind of thing. So I've had a huge shift in my sense of identity around the way that I think and the way that I relate, and was terrifying for many years, to be honest. And now I've embraced it, and ideally, hopefully, integrating both ways of being so that I can show up to a context and be like, okay, I can fit in this way and support what is happening here to step up. I don't like necessarily using verticality as like, okay, we're going up somewhere, but like to leverage, to rise to where it wants to be, to where the divine is calling us to be together, and to bring others along for the ride. I try to do that. I'm not saying I'm great at it. And that's part of the practice that I'm offering, is to bring in information from the divine and bring it into that more horizontal plane of the embodiment and relationality, and invite people to find their own lateral connection within that space and find their own guidance, and to do and be what feels most generative for them, so they can receive their own gifts that they might not trust in another space.
Love it.
Yeah.
That was improvisational flow.
Yeah, I guess so.
That was amazing. Improvisational flow. So Lisa, in there, Hilly asked you a question if you could relate being the brilliant woman and contributor and entrepreneur, and I believe you are. We know you would deny you are the richest woman in Pittsburgh. I don't think you would acknowledge it, but I think it's true. What would you say?
Richest spiritually, absolutely. There were so many things that I could relate to, absolutely. One being that, when somebody asks me the question, which inevitably if you meet a stranger there, you know, after they say hello and you make the polite introduction, they say, "What is it that you do?" And I always sort of smile and chuckle, and I say, that's a really a loaded question, because there's a lot that I do. Is it the dog rescuer hat that I wear, or is it the artist part of me, or is it the businesswoman, the holistic health practitioner? I don't really fit into a box. I'm just me. And, and I think it's the way that the times are shifting. People are becoming more aware of the fact that this field that we live in is really full of infinite possibilities. And I think that's what vibrant speaking is about. It's about looking at things that you may not have looked at a certain way. I have a lot of friends that are Tibetan monks, and when they're in their courses of their studies, they do this wonderful thing that's a debate. And I don't, have you ever seen a Tibetan monk debate?
Mm-hmm.
Just out of curiosity.
What they
do is they're given a topic, and they'll...
Okay. I was waiting for you to respond. Sorry. Thank you, Hillary. Hillary's blessing me with the earpiece.
Oh, okay. And but they'll
and Hillary's going to respond. She has a bubbling here.
Oh, I just wanted to say, okay. I practice Tibetan Buddhism, and so I'm excited for what you're going to say.
Yeah. So they'll share their viewpoints on whatever the topic is, and then when they feel that they have said enough, they're usually done in a circle. They smack their hand really loudly and they hand off the question to somebody else, and the other monk will stand up and share their insights. And what is so wonderful about the debate is there is no right answer. It's just another way of seeing something. And I really embrace that. I think that the world really needs to be seen like that. Nobody sees the world the same way through their eyes. Yeah. We may be looking at the same thing, and I may notice the polka dots on a sweater or the color or the hue, and Hillary may be looking at it and she'll notice this, you know, individual's socks or their smile. And it's just a different way of seeing. So Hillary, what is it that you wanted to share?
Oh, I was just excited to have you sharing about Tibetan Buddhist monks because of my studies in India and Nepal and staying at ashrams and temples for different periods of time. And I've witnessed this as well. And for me, there was like almost, I felt some like excitement and also anxiety witnessing them because of my own experience being in school and how I felt like, oh, I have to know the right answer. I don't think I know the right answer, you know, and I didn't speak up a lot, especially when I was in divinity school, because I had all this anxiety, all this energy going through all this transformation, which ideally school is encouraging transformation. In my experience, they would say, yeah, of course, we have to change our point of view and be open to new points of view and all of that. And yet there's this energy of, well, but this is what has been said down the line. And there's the old white guy who's teaching a lot of these classes and he's had tenure for 50 years.
Good line.
You know, and it's understandable. Like, we are all in this culture that has protected certain people's privileges and not encouraged and supported other people's views and life experience because that would be challenging to theirs. And so I think it's important to acknowledge power and privilege within this experience too. And also, I didn't feel that with these Tibetan Buddhist monks, like they were, even though they're on these different like planes in terms of, well, one's a Geshe and that's like they're a teacher and another is a young student, there was this understanding and rapport and love between them all. There's open heart.
Oh,
and
I agree.
And it really was profound to witness that.
I wanted to say something that I want to get Lisa and Hillary your comment. So I started to coach people on my paper route. My parents always said to me the same message, get another job. So I got another job. But what I noticed was with some people, I did have this experience that the light in their eyes and the quality of their breathing would change in these conversations. And they would come out and seek me out to have another conversation. Well, at a certain point, I ran a health food store in Port Jefferson, Long Island. And I would go to the store and people would visit me and tell me and share with me things. This one guy was hit by a truck and he had a kind of a bike that was made so he'd come see me. And one day the guy came to fix the refrigerator and he had a total emotional breakdown. And I went over and I just spoke to him and I listened to him because I felt like that what's happening is, and this is another lateral thing, it's hard to explain. I just felt he felt an opening, a relational space. And I did mention some vitamins to him, not to even sell him the vitamins, just the things I would have taken if I was stressed out. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because the owner called me. He was so excited about this. And I realized, like, he had an end result in mind. And I realized I had this process. Mm-hmm. And so my first journey into coaching was working with people with their breathing. And it's such an intimate thing when someone lays down and they breathe with you and you notice that together because you're kind of noticing their inner life, their inner anthropology, their movement. And it was like, at that level, it was such a beautiful, it was a sort of a wondrous thing. And also I enjoyed the conversation so much. So another thing for me, and I was curious if both of you could comment, I would have a challenge just being around this linear-driven information conversation. Mm-hmm. So when I developed Vibrant Speaking, I had a client I wanted to write a book called The Wisdom Tooth, who's a dentist out of Canada. And the more that we worked together, the more he said to me, Glenn, I don't want to write a book called The Wisdom Tooth. I want to walk on the beach and to be a health coach. So another thing is the breath and the – and you wake up to your claims to a new sense of vital movement – and awareness, it changes things. And I noticed that people become a different kind of thinker and a different kind of breather. And so the idea of vibrant speaking is to have a community of people on the same speakers bureau, including Janet in Hawaii, the mime, and Hillary and Lisa. And the idea is to explore and encourage each other to kind of go into these places where we're, because I don't want people to strain and speak. I don't want people to get through the talk. I want them to really have this experience of movement and wonder when they speak, so they can bring out these other attributes and encourage others. So what I've always had a challenge with, and I think a lot of people have this challenge, is they don't know how to write about that in a linear way. Mm-hmm. So some of those brilliant people I've met in the healing realm and in the creative realm, they don't know how to meet the world. You said it so well, Hillary, that they don't know how to meet the world where the world story is, and the story that a lot of people carry in their nervous system is about survival.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I was just envisioning some of the exercises that you might do with people as you're encouraging their vibrant, embodied speaking.
Yeah.
And what was coming to mind for me is if you're using the imagination in that way, too. I did a lot of theater when I was growing up and thought I might even go to college for theater, and so I would take improv theater classes and things. We would play around with different ways of inhabiting our body and expressing, and now I've been exploring more around polarity in relationship and the kind of yin and yang or masculine and feminine, although we don't have to place yin and yang, that dualism, onto masculine and feminine.
Yes,
it can be very fluid, but many cultures do, in the Chinese culture, they do relate.
So what happened was I had this, and this is where Lisa comes in. I'm going to talk about my relationship with Lisa, and something Lisa did recently has a lot to do with imagination, which is a gift of being in relationship. So we'll continue. I'll talk about the gift that Lisa just shared with me, and we'll talk about awakening your imagination and your body. Stay with us. Billy Lake, the easiest last name on the planet, Lisa LaRose, your life's precious, stay with it.
Feed your soul with waves of consciousness on Om Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are we back on the air, or are we dancing on the air, Lisa? We're dancing on the air? Listening to the Vibrant Living Network, Lisa LaRose. So, since Lisa's here... You're here, Hillary. There's two things when I want to address awakened imagination. So awakened imagination in my life has been one of the greatest gifts. I want to give you guys something to practice, and then I want to tie this into my relationship to Lisa and a recent profound gift. So I met a mystical teacher, someone that really informed me on imagination. And so about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, I had been married many years. Someone that I thought I dedicated my whole soul and beingness to. And I had this connection with Lisa 18 years. So it's really beautiful in life that you have one friend at least you can call 3 a.m, right? Mm-hmm. One friend and share what's on your soul. And sometimes you can't explain it. You just had its own. So I went through this passage because I was in such relational shock that I couldn't really function for about a year and a half. So yeah, people go crazy during breakups, separations, and divorces, and the nervous system has no idea what to do. And I didn't know this was going to be a new calling of mine. And so I got up before I would go to bed at night. I would see what was happening. I would notice it, and I'd revision it. So I'd revision it. And what I mean by that, I would see the situation, the facts, the looking, the what you call the facts. You got to go beyond the facts when you use your imagination. And I started to feel this color of blue in the movement of blue. And by 3-4 a.m, I would see things in a very different way. And my breathing changed, and I breathed into places in my cells, and new imagery would come to me. And I would pay attention. So the imagery might come as like a moving leaf. When I walked into the ground would like give me back prana energy. Like I started to move through a tunnel where I saw something new. And along that came a book title, came an awareness, which soon became Divorce the Patterns, Not Each Other. Divorce the Patterns, Not Each Other. And a language came for this along with the imagery. So my body, my new body, informed me of a language and a way of sharing. And this last, my birthday was on January 4th, and Lisa gifted me and blessed me with the imagery that had come to me 8 years ago of a relational phoenix. Mm-hmm. So the imagery came that aligned to me is not a single person, it's a couple. Mm-hmm. And so when Lisa did this, it totally caught me by surprise because I'd been talking to her about it, and then it came. And so sometimes when I don't know what to say to someone, I go, look at this. Like this is the... So the awakened imagination, I feel the deepest medicine in our souls and our life is imagery. So with speakers, I want to know, I often ask people, who are they? What's their superpower? And who in the room, what's that person's superpower? Mm-hmm. You know, because I want to have the people have this experience. So at night, like you could literally call me 3 a.m. and I'm very conscious at night when I'm sleeping usually, and I'm noticing the imagery. And in the morning, I sit in the vertical, and I exhale 3 times to let the imagery move my day. So the movement that comes from the imagery, right? There's a movement that comes from the imagery. And when Lisa did that, so that's the profoundness of community. Mm-hmm. That's why I want Lisa coming. I want Lisa to help people with whatever gift she wants to bring. But I also felt like the imagery that she brought me was so... It was grounded in a way. Like, I didn't have to say anything. I just showed people that imagery. And I want you guys to all see this imagery. I'm going to place it boldly on Vibrant Living, Inc. My new website is Vibrant Living Connections. No, it's not. It's Vibrant Living Network. I had a linear glitch there. Vibrant Living Network. And now we'll be working with Dr. Mark Grossman on Vibrant Seeing. So Vibrant Seeing came from imagery. So the manager of the restaurant yelling at someone. It came from a new seeing. So there's two states. That's just the beginning of the show. There's only the counterfeit state and the vital state. And the vital state always has a sensation, right? So when I met Hillary, I knew Hillary would bridge the gap to allow people to feel this in their body. So we're in a room together. We could begin to feel... You could feel an incredible talk. A speaker that really is moving the audience, is speaking to the soul of the audience. So in Vibrant Speaking, many people have discovered new callings, new ways of new careers, a new way of expressing themselves. We work with authors, and now we're going to be doing Vibrant Films, and we're going to have a series called, I just came to the other day, Film Fit, How to Be Fit for the Character.
Because my character has moved different and very different in ways that I have. I'm going to let you talk for a little bit, Hillary. I'm going to talk to her.
Well, I love what Glenn has been sharing around how he moved with these images out of the sleep state, because moving in grace, the mindful embodiment practice that I received and offer to people, is really about waking up. So we go into an envisioned state of deep sleep, and then we wake up to images and visions and allow those visions to guide our movement into the day. So that was the beginning of Moving in Grace, was doing this process from deep sleep to awakening. And I sometimes teach it like that, but mostly now I'm about bringing our kind of deep sleep state into an experience in relationship with the earth. So we're like a seed, and we have a hard shell, and we have these hard bones. And so we can relate the bones of our body to the rocks of the earth, and then grow with that seed, grow the roots as our ligaments, and start to build connection and flexibility as we wake up, and then move into the soil and relate to this experience of nourishing ourselves from that deep inward darkness in relationship with the earth. And so much of our culture is afraid of this little death, in a sense, and really going into a state that is close to death, close to that darkest place of our sleep state, and seeing how we can let go from that place. We do go there every night in sleep, ideally, if we're getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
And we can go there in our daytime if we need that, and we can go into a really rejuvenating, regenerative place, and let ourselves surrender a little bit more and receive more information from this lateral relationship to the divine too. And that's helped me to learn how to do that on a daily basis all the time.
That's great. So I have a question for both you and Glenn. I think that what you're speaking to is so powerful, Hillary. It's about what Glenn was talking about, where you activate that rhythmic vitality. So if somebody were wanting, to get one nugget of their most precious treasure and how that they could activate that so that they can embrace and start to become a vibrant speaker, what would you say would be a powerful exercise that they could start to practice that would allow them to become more into this state of and awaken their imagination?
Well, it's a good question. What comes to mind and to body for me is to build a relationship with the ground, with the earth, through the body. And the best way to do that, I believe, and this can be done in any time, any place, is through feeling a sense of rootedness with the earth. And for me, that comes through the perennial body, which is, this is kind of anatomical conversation, but I would say like the pelvic bowl or the base of the pelvis has a lot of power in it. And if we're not open to experiencing that power and letting that place be open into relationship with the earth, then we're cutting off so much of our being and our capacity to be in relationship. Most people in our culture are not open there because it's too, quote unquote, dangerous, possibly. And it takes intentionality to open that place. Yoga helps people do that. Like, there's this Mulbund that especially Kundalini yoga talks about, which is, or Kegels, with like clenching that pelvic bowl in the base of the pelvis. This place holds access to our sexual power and this relationship to the earth. So whatever way you can do that, there's multiple ways, and the way I do it generally is to imagine roots growing down from that area, from like the base of my spine down into the earth, and seeing if I can just relax all of the muscles, all of the ligaments, all the tendons in the pelvic bowl region, and just let go. And then breathe in support and nourishment from the earth and that place. And then to breathe from there and to speak from there as much as possible.
I'm laughing, Lisa, by the way, brilliant inquiry, Lisa. I was reading a book. I read several books on different practices to open up energy. And I was reading this one woman's book on the G-spot in New York City. And she's talking about a man's experience of the G-spot. And she's saying most people experience their anatomy from the outside in. It's a description in some dead book, right? Mm-hmm. But she was saying when a man actually experiences, it changes everything. So I called her up, and she was bike riding in New York City. We had the most delicious conversation. So we have these bodies full of energy and wonder. So when Hillary, why I'm so excited to have Hillary expand Vibrant Speaking is that this gives a speaker, a human aware person, a divine distributor, if you will, awakened person, the ability to bring this into their emanation, into their talk, into their wonder. I love the imagery of what Hillary just shared. Yeah, to be able to be alive in our full body, which most people have no, they don't have a clue. And by the way, these questions are so powerful today, Lisa. I'm digging it.
No, you know, I think it makes such a difference because, you know, so much of what you delve into, Glenn, is about, you know, awakening a new possibilities. And I think when you look into the introduction, for somebody to even become aware of that, thank you very much, Hillary, for sharing that, because a lot of people aren't aware of their pelvic bowl or you know, even their posturing. I know for you, Glenn, that, you know, the breath is really important and, you know, pulling in the air and, you know, filling that bowl. I don't know if you'd care to comment any further about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, many... Our relationship to our breathing is the most powerful relationship to our purification, our seeing, our movement. Many times I've had such intimacy just being with someone when I first meet them, just getting a sense of our breathing rhythm. I think the breath is the first passage to home and shared homeness. My new interest, my deepening interest is relational breathing. A lot of people live very taut in their sympathetic nervous system. They live in a constant state of emergency and doing this and burnout. So the breath and just exhaling, letting that exhale go with using imagery is one of the deepest medicines. And that's something that has been a part of Vibrant Speaking forever. Mm-hmm. And I'm still like when Hillary just shared that visualization, it's medicine. You're hearing medicine. That's what medicine is. Medicine is being able to inhabit our body, and then also deeply appreciate what other souls, other people aren't able to articulate. So when someone's really stuck around and frightened, I just breathe for them.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
I agree.
I'm curious if you have any ideas with the, you know, given your question, I often experience people who ask the question, have some insight themselves too. Mm. So I'm curious if there's anything.
With a minute to go, Lisa, you've got a divine question on the top of the table here.
I agree with you. The breath is really, really important. When I'm sitting with somebody and they're coming to me with a health challenge or a diagnosis, mm-hmm. a belief in what their path should be, you know, I kind of ask them, you know, to tune into that same breath. And there's a very simple energy correction exercise that I have them do, you know, where they, without thinking, you know, clasp their hands together and, you know, notice what thumb is on top and then ask them to cross that leg. And just getting them into just a movement practice and then asking them to take you know, 10 deep breaths where with each breath in, they put the tongue on the roof of their mouth, like plugging into the electrical socket. And then they breathe out to let go and take it off of the roof of the mouth. And most people will say that they feel very relaxed after doing that practice. You can actually see the first few breaths are, you know, still very tense. But by the time they get to that 10th breath, just that practice really does relax and seem to calm the nervous system.
I also want to announce today, thank you, Lisa. There's no such thing as a heart attack. Your heart will never attack, ever. So I want you to realize right now, breathe in with a breath of gratitude. Your heart's there for you. It wants you to discover, be an instrument of compassion, love, and awareness, power, wonder. Your heart's not about attacking you. It wants to bring you the pulse of life and have you become more rhythmic by yourself and others. Your life's precious joy. Thank you, Hillary. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Chris.